Good morning, Green Pine. If you're a guest with us today, I just want to echo the same thing David James did up here a little bit ago. We're just so thankful to have you here. We're so grateful that you join us as we worship the Lord. For those of you who may not know me, my name is Mike Reinstein. I'll be our guest preacher today. My wife, Rachel, and I, along with our two little girls, have been coming to Green Pine for a little bit over a year, and Rachel and I have also both been members here for a little over a year. And, you know, you're in luck today, because even if I tank as our guest preacher, you're a guest. Come back next week. Jared's awesome. We're so blessed to have Jared as our pastor here. So you get a redo if you come back next week. Honestly, though, I'm honored to be here today and be able to bring the scriptures and walk through that together as a church. So you may recall last week, Jared, he preached a lot of what he covered in his sermon was on faith. And he mentioned during that sermon that I was going to talk more about faith the following week. And so here we are today. And indeed, I'm going to talk more about faith this morning. We're going to specifically be talking about one aspect of faith. We're going to be talking more about how we as Christians can endure in faith. And so if you're a note taker, if you're somebody who likes to outline the sermon and kind of work through that as you go through, if you were taking a title down, that would be a great title, Endure in Faith. And the main point of the sermon this morning is just that idea that we can endure in faith. And there's going to be two primary ways we see that we as believers endure in faith. The first of those is by looking to the Son's finished work. And the second is by trusting the Father's caring discipline. And we're going to be looking at Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 11. But before we dig into that this morning, before I read the text, I want to get your mind moving a little bit. I know you just had Sunday school, you just sat through stuff. I don't want you falling asleep during the first 5 minutes of the sermon this morning. So get your minds moving. You'd follow with me a little thought exercise. So I want you to imagine you're in your vehicle and you're driving to a big store in the area. You know, I don't know if you're a Walmart or a Target person. I don't know if you're a Lowe's or Home Depot shopper, but it doesn't really matter. That's the idea that here, though. I'm talking about one of these big anchor stores. So you're driving your vehicle to this store and you're going through the parking lot. You know, you're navigating your way through, looking for the prime spot, right? You want to find your best spot. I don't know if you're in your van or your car. Maybe you're a truck driver. If you're driving a truck, I know you're going to back in to the spot there. But regardless, you get there and you park and you get out and you begin to approach the building, right? And all these big stores, they have the big double doors, right? There's usually an entrance and an exit. And as you're walking, you just confidently approach the doors, right? You've gone into these stores 1,000 times. As you're walking up, you see the sensor on top of the door, and you know that these are automatic doors, right? You don't have to think about it. And the reason you don't have to think about it is because you know what these doors are supposed to do, right? You know what the doors are supposed to do. You don't have to stop and concern yourself with whether or not they're going to open as you walk in. And I mentioned that this morning because I just want us to think of that as a way in our life that we often have automatic sort of faith, right? Something that's instinctive to us. We don't have to put a whole lot of thought into it. And I want us to contrast that with how often it is in our relationship with God, right? Is it as easy for you to walk in the automatic doors as it is to endure in faith during difficult times? And I think if we're honest with ourselves, we'll all agree that when we're struggling, when we're in hardship and in suffering, it's not easy to do. I want to make sure that in comparing it to automatic doors, I'm not minimizing hardship, right? I want us to really take hardship for what it is. And you may be here this morning, and you may be struggling, right? You may have a loved one who's struggling. Hardship and trials are real. You may be here today, and you may be suffering with crippling depression or anxiety. Perhaps you or a loved one recently was diagnosed with cancer. Perhaps you have a parent or a close friend who is struggling with dementia. Maybe you lost your job and you're facing financial insecurity. Perhaps you're here today and you're facing persecution for your faith in one way or another. So many of our brothers and sisters in the world are faced with persecution for their faith in Christ every day. When these things come, and they will come, when it feels like life isn't going as it should be, right, we need to remember that we can endure in faith. And I want to contrast this a little bit more. So if you're approaching those double doors, right, the automatic doors are there, the sensor, what happens if when you go to walk into those doors, one day they don't open, right? You confidently approach, you smack your face right into the double doors. If that happens to you, you know there's something wrong, right? You know there's a problem, but you also know that the problem is with the doors. There's something broken, whether it's the doors or whether it's the sensor, there's something broken with the doors. And I want us to be careful, and I want us to think on that this morning, that we don't do the same thing with God. That when we don't think God is acting like He's supposed to, we don't begin to treat Him like broken doors. And as this morning, as we get into reading the text together, that's precisely what we're going to look at. We're going to look at the hard question of how you can continue to trust that following Jesus is what's best for you. How can you continue to endure in faith? And so with that, we're going to be in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 11. If you would you stand with me this morning as I read this text aloud, just in honor of God's Word? The author of Hebrews writes, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, have you not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood? And have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline, in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as it seemed best to them. But he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." Thank you. You may be seated. As we move into verse 1 this morning, we're just going to kind of walk through the text together. We see that verse 1 starts out there with, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses." And I want to give you a little tip here, right? If you're, maybe you're newer to reading the Bible, but in general, if you're reading the text, if you're reading scriptures, and it starts with the word "therefore," it's a really, really great indicator that you need to look back at to what just happened in the previous section you're reading. Because it's essentially the author's way of saying, you know, what I'm about to say is based on what I just said. So to treat this faithfully, we're going to back up a little bit, and we're going to go back to chapter 10. Now, in chapter 10, the author of Hebrews, he really lays out unbelief. Unbelief versus faith. Unbelief in the lives of believers. He warns Christians here in chapter 10. He says, unbelief is a very dangerous thing. Unbelief for us believers, if we turn from our faith in God and we don't endure, there is nothing left for us but judgment. Those of us in this world, there's two options. There's God's way, and there's no way. And so if you're here this morning, I want you to take heart, though, because the author of Hebrews also at the end of the chapters offers some hope. And he says in there, I'll read it to you specifically. He says, but we are not of those who shrink back. Right? And I can echo that this morning with us as well. We are not those who shrink back. We are those who have faith. And after that, he defines faith. And I'd like to define faith for you this morning. And he does it here in the text, but I've summed things up a little bit, and I want us to consider this definition of faith as we move into chapter 11. So I want us to think this morning of faith in God. So faith in God is the confidence He will do what He has promised. Faith in God is the confidence that He will do what He has promised. As the author of Hebrews goes into chapter 11, he lays out this text. The chapter is often called the Hall of Fame, and we see many Old Testament saints here, and their lives are laid out. And it's these people, their lives are the ones the author of Hebrews is talking about in verse 1, where he says this cloud of witnesses. And he goes through many of them in there. There's Abel, there's Abraham, there's Sarah, Moses, Rahab, David. And he continues. He goes through many of them, and many who their lives are a testimony to that faith, the fact that God is faithful and He will fulfill His promises. Their lives are a testimony to that. And that's where we head into chapter 12 here. And he's essentially about to lay out for us how our lives can be a testimony of that faith as well. We can endure as they endured. So, as we get into the second part of verse 1, it continues. We look to this great cloud of witnesses. And I want us to think of the author here telling us basically this. Look, God is faithful. Look, God is faithful. So let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. So we see here he compares the Christian life to a race, right? And I want us to be clear here, it's not a sprint. All right, this isn't a sprint race we're talking about, it's a marathon. We're talking about a long-distance race. Now, I wonder if I asked this morning, how many of you here are marathon ready? You marathon ready today? If we left service right now, is anybody ready to go 26.2 miles? Maybe there's a couple, right? We've got a couple, okay. That's how about a half marathon? Anybody ready for 13.1? I can tell you I'm not. I'd probably die, right? I wouldn't be able to do it. But I can tell you why I wouldn't be able to do it, and I can tell you why there are people here who would. It's because they're conditioned to do it, right? It's taken a lot of effort to be able to run that race successfully, right? If I step out here today, I'm not going to make it very far. But there are a lot of things that I would need to start doing and that I would need to stop doing. If I was going to be able to run a marathon, right, I'd have to be trained and work up to this. I would probably need to actually start running as a starter, right? I would probably need to throw out the ice cream in the fridge. You know, these are just some things that are some simple examples of things in our life that we would need to start and stop doing to run the marathon. And that's what the author of Hebrews puts forth to us here he warns us of sin and these weights. And these are the things that are going to hinder us as we try to run the race. So the race of the Christian life is like a marathon. And if there are things that we don't start doing, and if there are things that we refuse to stop doing, we may not finish the race, at least not successfully, right? We may be passed out around the two-mile mark. And so I think that's a wonderful illustration of what it means to endure in faith. It's to complete the marathon. Now, I also find it interesting here that the author, he mentions sin, and we know that, right? We know we need to put down sin. When we come to Jesus, we have to lay aside sin, and he continues to work that out in us, right? It's not an overnight transformation, but our life in that race begins to be one where we put down sin as we go and become more and more like Jesus. But he also mentions these weights, and another translation puts it as encumbrances. So if there are things, there may be things in our life that are not sinful, that are still keeping us from effectively running the race. These can be good things. I think for us as Westerners, most of us as Westerners here, one of the biggest issues we have is a busy sickness, right? We're busy, busy, busy. We have very few hours during the day that aren't preoccupied. And if we do have that time, we often spend it binge-watching TV shows, right? I'm guilty. Maybe we spend it on our phone or social media. Maybe we have our kids encompassed in extracurricular activities. And maybe these things keep us from being in community with our church. Right? These aren't inherently bad things. They're not inherently sinful. And sometimes that's the question we ask, whether or not something's okay for us to be doing in the Christian life. Is it sinful? Honestly, that's about the lowest question you can ask. That's kind of asking, like, can I get away with this? I think a better question for us is, does it help me run? Is it a hindrance to me in running the marathon? And so I want us to consider that as we look into the next part in verse 2. Because if you're like me, when you hear that, you're thinking, this is loss. This is great loss. The reason we struggle with sin and struggle with putting down the weights is because we like it. It appeals to our flesh. We like those things. And to give them up feels like loss. And that's where the author of Hebrews continues to tell us, though. He says, we can do this by looking to Jesus. And so there we have in verse 2, by looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Excuse me. So we look to Jesus. We look to Jesus, someone who suffered great loss. And we model our lives after him. We look to the joy that's set before us. We sang several songs this morning that had to deal with bringing many sons and daughters to glory. Back in Hebrews chapter 2, the author tells us very explicitly that that's what Jesus was accomplishing on the cross. That's the joy that was in his mind. He looked ahead to us, to the day when we would be brought to glory because of what he was doing. We look to him, and simply put, we look to the gospel. We look to Jesus, who God himself, our creator, came down to set things right for those of us who were in rebellion against him. He came, he lived the perfect life that we couldn't. All of us are in rebellion apart from Christ. Yet he did it. Where every one of us has failed, he overcame. Yet he was put to death and he gave up his life for us to die in our place, to take on the full wrath of God. And so I want to be clear, we endure suffering in this life, right? And we see that Jesus endured suffering. He endured great loss. But the suffering he endured that day is greater than any suffering that any one of us who are in Christ will ever face. Because not only did he face physical suffering, but he took on the full wrath of God for sin in our place as a substitute for us. And he was raised from the dead, vindicated by God, saying, "This it was not justice that Christ died, but my wrath for those who believe in him has been appeased. And now you can become my children, my sons and daughters, like you were intended to be." And that rebellion threw everything askew. So what we see here, I think, in this first primary way, that we can endure in faith by looking to the Son's finished work. Right? That's that first primary way. We can endure in faith by looking to the Son's finished work. It no longer looks like loss. We can see the joy set before us too. The day when we will be made new. We will be made like Christ. Our testimony can echo that of the cloud of witnesses we saw in chapter 11. Your life can be a testimony to a God that fulfills his promises. It's interesting, verse 4, he basically says there, you know, well, the struggles in this life haven't taken your life yet. You're still alive, right? You're still alive, so keep running. That's the emphasis here. Keep running by looking to Jesus. Don't stop. Life will be hard. The author assumes it here. Suffering will come. But he appeals to our adoption. I think it's important to pause here and think before we move into the next section. Because sometimes I'm afraid when we hear this kind of message, we can hear, try harder. Right? You just need to try harder. And I don't know about you, but in my own walk with Christ, when I'm just trying harder, I typically don't succeed for very long. And so the emphasis here is not to try harder, but to pour yourself into Christ, to get more of Him, to seek Him. And fortunately, the second half here tells us we're not even doing that alone. And that's where the aspect of discipline comes in our lives, and suffering. And this is a hard teaching. This really is. I've been wrestling with this for the last few weeks, and God's been showing me a lot in my own life and how challenging it is to view hardship and suffering as God's discipline. When we're faced with these hardships, that God is helping us to become disciplined. Our Father is passionate for us. Let me continue reading. In verse 5, "And have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by Him. For the Lord disciplines the one He loves and chastises every son whom He receives." And so discipline by the Lord is His love for us. It's His love for us. But I want us to see something else very clearly. I want to offer some clarity here, because what I don't want you to hear is that God is causing suffering in your life. God is not the ultimate cause of suffering and hardship. The evil and suffering in the world is a direct consequence of sin and rebellion against Him. The tough part here is the truth of the matter is the sin and suffering in the world, it's my sin. It's your sin. We're culpable. We're the ones who are in rebellion against Him. Yet He doesn't leave us there, right? We look to His finished work. He came to set things right. Jared's been preaching on that for the last several weeks as we've been working through the book of Luke, this sermon series. The idea of Jesus as the King who writes the upside down world. That's what He's come to do. He didn't leave us in it. And God doesn't leave us to ourselves to even continue following Jesus. He offers us this blessing of discipline. Hardship and suffering is going to come, period. But for those of us who are in Jesus, we can seek Him in that time, and it can be used in a very positive way in our lives. So I want to make sure what we hear today is that you are not being punished by God when He allows hardship. God is using it to discipline us, to show us our true need, to condition us to run the marathon. Right? I said, I would need to start doing some things and stop doing some things. Right? And it's not all on me. God is working in our lives to condition us as well. I want to offer an illustration here that I think you'll enjoy. So many of you here do know my older daughter. She's 4 now. She's back in the children's ministry this morning. And earlier this summer, when she was still 3, there's one night I'm putting her to bed. And for those of you who do know her, she's very passionate. She feels a lot of emotion. And it's bedtime, and she's got this tube scarf, right? It's a polka dot, thick tube scarf. And I see she's got it wrapped around her neck. She's comforting her. It's warm. She's enjoying it here, laying in her bed. But I'll tell you, I look at this thing, I go, that's a noose. So I can't let her go to bed with this tube scarf around her neck. So, you know, like a good, loving, caring father, I take it from her. And she's not too happy about it, right? I get the responses of, you know, Dad, you ruin all my fun. And I didn't realize that was going to start so early, but it does. So, you know, that's how my daughter responds, right? And I have to let her work through it, right? It's not good for her to have that scarf. So she can't see the big picture, right? She's limited in her vision. But isn't this like us? She thought me taking the scarf from her was punishment. To her, it was leaving her in an uncomfortable position. To a 3-year-old, that was pure agonizing suffering. And so I think sometimes when we find ourselves in hardship and suffering, as believers, we can rest that God does see the bigger picture, that God is working, and He can use it to discipline us. In fact, the author continues in verse 7. He says, it is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline, in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. So if we're not being disciplined by God, we're not really his adopted children. We should expect discipline, just like we discipline our own children. The text then continues, besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time, as it seemed best to them. But he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. I want us to see here that God uses loving discipline in our lives to show us our true need. Hardship is again and again what reminds us that we need Jesus. It's God disciplining us and conditioning us. He's using that suffering that's already going to come. It's going to come in our lives. But God is using it to condition us to look back to Jesus, to look to his finished work, to trust him, and to move forward with him. I want you to know that it's this caring discipline of God that keeps us running the race. And that's our second primary way this morning that we can endure in faith is just that idea, that we can endure in faith by trusting the Father's caring discipline. We can endure in faith by trusting the Father's caring discipline. We're called to look to Jesus, and God, in his amazing, passionate love and grace for us, carries us along and uses the suffering and hardship in our lives for good. I'd like to take a little bit here, and I'd like to focus on some application as we work to finish up the passage this morning. So, when it comes to how do we apply this to our lives, I want us to remember that as Christians, every single circumstance of your life can be for your good. Every single thing you encounter in a daily basis can be for your good. I once sat through a sermon. It was really a good one. On Romans chapter 8, and the preacher there, he said something that stuck with me. And I want us to see this morning that in this application, maybe we can gain two new perspectives, okay? So the first of these new perspectives is just that idea of every circumstance in your life can be for your good. But what this preacher told me about that really stuck with me, was the idea that suffering itself, we view it so horribly, right? I mean, I don't know about you, but I really hate suffering. My wife will tell you, even if I get a cold, I'm pretty miserable. Maybe some of you can relate. But the preacher, what he said to us was that suffering is your servant. Suffering is your slave. Suffering isn't ruling over you, it's serving you. Because God is using it to discipline you. He specifically preached this from Romans 8, and so there's two verses from Romans 8 I'd like to read to you this morning. And that is verse 18, where Paul writes, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us." He says, in fact, the creation itself groans in anticipation of the day when we will be given glory as God's adopted children in full when Jesus returns. But he continues, in verse 28, as many of us know this verse, probably by heart, but it's the idea here where Paul says, "And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose." And so what this preacher told us and what I want to tell you today is that you can trust that God is working things for your good. And if you're wondering how can God possibly be using this cancer for good? How can God possibly be using this person's addiction to drugs for my good as a believer? And the truth of the matter is that it points us to Jesus. And what the author in Romans, what Paul tells us, is that this good that's for us in verse 28 is actually just us being conformed into the image of Christ. Whatever you're faced with, God is working and using it to conform you into Christ's image, making you more like Jesus each and every day. He suffered first. We should expect no different. We shouldn't expect an easy life. In fact, I would not a gambling man, but I would gamble and I would bet big money that if each of us here really got a life with no hardship, we wouldn't keep following Jesus. I think it's that disciplines us and conditions us to finish that marathon, to run the marathon strong. So the second new perspective I want to give you is actually a warning. Here's a warning, and you may not have thought of this before. I know this is something that God was really working on in me over the last few weeks as I worked on this sermon. The idea of the warning to not waste your suffering. Don't waste your suffering. If you're going through a hardship right now, let it push you to Jesus. Let it discipline you. Let God's, you know, you can trust his caring discipline. Let it lead you back to what Jesus has already done for you and the hope we have in our future as God's adopted children. I'd like to give you an example of what this can look like. And it's a personal one. I want you to see this morning that I think any of us are capable of wasting the opportunity that a suffering presents us. So most of you here don't know this, but when I was around 27, due to some very serious foot problems, I began to lose my ability to walk. At one point, I really couldn't walk much more than a half mile. Jogging, you know, even to the end of the church here would have been excruciating. Over about a year and a half, I exhausted non-surgical options. You know, even at the end, having these hard plastic foot and ankle orthotics, which didn't really help much either. But I really didn't want to have surgery, you know. And so during this time, I prayed. I kept asking God, can you heal this? And I said, I'm young. I'm dealing with this. I said, I don't want to deal with this. And after that, the only answer seemed to be surgery. So I went through two surgeries, one on each foot, a year apart. Each one had about a 12 to 18 month recovery. My wife can certainly attest to the miserable time that was for me. Quite a bit of time with no weight bearing, cast, boot, crutches, scooter. I was wheeling around the office. Everybody gave me a hard time about that. Physical therapy. You know, I can even tell you now, my feet are not like they were before I had the problems. But what I have to be honest about is that I think I wasted my suffering. I think I wasted it. Instead of letting it turn me to Jesus, I let it fester. I was angry about it. I said, how can this be happening? How can I be losing my ability to walk? Why am I having to endure this? Are these surgeries even going to work? Right? And it didn't even hit me how ungrateful I had been through that suffering and how much I had wasted it until I realized as I was working on this sermon that I hadn't even asked God, or I hadn't even thanked God for restoring my ability to walk through those surgeries. I mean, we're looking 4 years out at this point since the first one, and I hadn't yet thanked him. I wasted the suffering. And so I want to encourage you today to not waste your suffering. Don't waste the opportunity for God to discipline you and condition you to be more like him and to continue to run the race. So in closing today, as you go, I want you to take heart. I want you to remember that we can endure in faith. We can endure in faith by looking to the Son's finished work and by trusting our Father's caring discipline. Will you pray with me? Father, thank you. Thank you that you have adopted us as your children. Thank you for what you've done with us through Christ. That you bought us that you paid the price for our sin and brought us into your kingdom. Lord, I pray as we go this week, whatever hardship and suffering we endure, that you would help us to allow it to be discipline in our lives. That you would continue to work in us to make us more like Jesus. Help us to trust you and look to you. Help us to look to the finished work of Christ.